Post-Harlan Monologics. Number 00015. Recorded on February 1, 2023. Production location, Post. Harlan. Texas. And Waco. God, Guns, and Waco. Chapter 15.
The opinions of Maverick 88 are not necessarily the opinions of Maverick 88. Sensitive content warning. Viewer discretion is advised.
Now, buckle up. You are on the runaway train of thought. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the one, the only, Maverick 88.
So, here I sit in between the lapping waves of the DFW ice storm of 2023. Things are bad out here. Everything is iced over. The go is slow, if you can go at all. Many cannot. And it's fixing to get worse in the next hour or so. In fact, the next wave is starting to come in here in drips and drizzles on the windshield. And sooner than not, it's going to be another blast of sleet and freezing rain that's supposed to stack up to a full half inch of just straight ice on top of everything else that's going. And as I look out across the parking lot, it's just a sheet of ice. You could fucking play hockey on it, you know? A little lumpy where there's some tire tread marks, but otherwise it's just ice. And I've been out, you know, the Dwayne Schneider of Post-Harlan, Texas, out chipping away ice and throwing down the CMA ice melt that I had mentioned previously, and helping people get ice off their vehicles and just whatever it takes. I'm kind of off of my regular schedule now. It's sort of kind of an emergency operation, making myself available, but I'm going to take myself a little break here. Man, I've been beating the shit out of my body in the past 5 days. It's just, I'm too old for this shit. Something happened yesterday with this storm, though, that I don't recall ever seeing before. We had sleet coming down. Yeah, like dogs and cats and buckets and shit, you know? I mean, buckets of dogs and cats, frozen ones falling out of the sky. While that was happening, we had thunder rumbling, and then lightning flashing. And then everything is fucking white, you know? Everything is under ice. And when the lightning flashed, the whole world just like goes purple for a second. It was fucking crazy. I tried to get it on the video, but to no avail. My timing was off. So here we go. Winter conditions. This is what it's like, you know. DFW, Post-Harlan. We're generally in an ice belt here, right? More or less. Rarely do you get just straight up snow that accumulates. It does happen. But normally we're hovering in the high 20s, low 30s during the winter, you know, at worst, with occasional drops down lower than that. But this is where we are right now. We're between 25 and 32 for the past few days. bands, you know, recurring bands of precipitation rolling up from, off the deserts, you know, out of Mexico and West Texas, streaming across into North Texas here, and then out into like Arkansas and beyond. And, you know, it's Gulf air mixing with Arctic air. And the Arctic air ain't really that, it hasn't really pushed down to where we're getting like in single digits or anything like that. We're really just kind of on the edge, but we're close enough inside the freezing temperature to be just getting continual bands of frozen precipitation. But it ain't quite cold enough. It's weird. I heard a little bit coming in on the radio about the conditions, you know. Way up high in the atmosphere, we've got the warm air from the south. It's like 50 degrees plus, like way high in the sky. And then it's colder down here below. It's like the whole concept of hot air rises, cold air sinks. And this is the dynamic we're operating in here. We're cold down here, but it's warmer up there. It's raining up there, and it's coming down here as frozen precipitation, right? It's a clash. It's a clash. It's two masses kind of fighting against each other at this point in time. And this is what winter often looks like in post-Arlen, Texas. So we had the thunder sleet yesterday. We haven't had that yet today. And I've never had that in my whole life. It's very strange. Winter weather. What do you do? You know, what do you do? I'll tell you what you don't do. For all you who don't know, right? I was just talking to somebody who doesn't know this weather. Just doesn't know it. They're from Mexico City, right? Somebody at work. And now I'm trying to teach this person like how to drive in these conditions, how to clear off the ice and shit from your car before you even go. Just little tips like that, right? And the one thing I forgot to say was, do not, and I repeat, do not eat the yellow snow, right? Because some people need to be taught that sort of thing. You know what I mean, and the guy next to you knows what I mean. I think I know what I mean. Don't eat the yellow snow, right? That's just like a rule to live by. Like Confucius say, don't eat the yellow snow, right? And what else he say? Hot rod burn rubber. There's all kinds of things this Confucius guy said. Something on those lines that I was told by an old Italian lady one time was, and it was too late too. She told me after the fact sort of thing. She's shaking her finger at me. Don't shit where you eat, right? Don't shit where you eat. So we got this whole pissing and shitting dynamic going. You know, welcome to post-Arlen monologics, right? Don't shit where you eat. Why do I say she was too late? Because what was happening was I was already involved with somebody, right? And like the where you eat part of it is like on your job, for one really good example, right? So I'm on the job and I hooked up with somebody on the job, and it was kind of dramatic. It wasn't really working too well. There was a lot of fucking problems. You know what? You get hooked up with somebody who just, it doesn't really work for you. You should be able to just kind of shut the door, turn your back, walk the fuck away, wipe your hands clean, and try again somewhere else. But not when you shit where you eat, right? Not when you get involved with somebody on the job. And this is a whole story. I'm going to save it for some other time, you know. Remind me about the witch I used to go with. But that's a whole fucking monologue, probably a series of monologues on its own. It was a bad relationship. And there, you know what? There was no way out. I was stuck. I was stuck having to go to work and having to literally in a room where I sat at this desk and the opposing desk in front of me was her. I had to sit and look at her while we were like going through all this fucking breakup shit. It was horrible, horrible fucking time. Don't shit where you eat. You know, that was back in my days in Somerset, New Jersey. I kicked around a lot in Somerset back then, you know. I married a woman when I was young. This is prior to that. And got divorced when I was young. But she came from Somerset, so our first apartment was in Somerset. She worked in Somerset. I worked in Somerset. In fact, there's this area, like, what's it, Davidson Avenue, World's Fair Drive. I worked, like, in all these different buildings, just, like, in this one block, right? I had the job here, then a job there, then a job there, but all, like, in the same area. And this is one of the places. I was, like on Davidson Avenue right over there. It was, like, the tallest building around that they had. And I was shitting where I ate there. Right down the street from that is a church where my grandparents used to go to, right? I got stories about when I was a little kid being dragged off to this. It was a Ukrainian, probably still is, I'm sure it still is, Ukrainian Orthodox Church, right? The St. Andrews is what it was called, what it is called. Surely they haven't changed that. Why would they, right? So St. Andrews Ukrainian Orthodox Church, right? It's the same church that they're like banning in the Ukraine right now, if you know the news, right? You got this whole thing going on over there between these two varieties, you know, predominantly two varieties of Ukrainian Orthodoxy. And the old one is tied to the bishop in Moscow. So they've kind of like created and set up this other one without those ties that gets support from the hierarch metropolitan down in Constantinople, well, was used to be called Constantinople, it's Istanbul, but he's down there, right? The whole thing, Orthodoxy's got a whole lot of ins and outs and peculiarities, and I don't want to get all tangled up in that, but like there's predominantly two versions of Ukrainian Orthodoxy going on right now, and this is the old one, and it's what my grandparents were a part of. They're buried there, right? That's where they, if I wanted to go to their gravesite, that's where they are. They're back behind this church in Somerset, right where South Boundbrook comes up and meets it, right? I think about my grandparents, right? My grandmother is like the angel, the saint of my life, because I know that she is the one woman for certain, you know, who prayed and prayed and prayed for my stupid soul. I know that there were others, and I would say that they were kind of periodic, and I'm pretty positive that my grandmother was intense about it, being Orthodox, and now I've become that late in life, and I get an idea what Orthodoxy's like and what Orthodox people do. She used to, like, I would go visit her, even when I was still married, like, to the first wife. We'd come up from Somerset, right, and we'd go up and visit her at her house, and she didn't speak English, right? You know, both of my grandparents, they migrated here in the 50s, and neither of them learned how to speak English, and I never learned how to speak Ukrainian. I'm only half of that. My mother's not, so I'm just American, you know, I'm American, and I'd go and visit her. And we would talk by, like, drawing pictures, right? I would throw some paper down on the table and a pencil, and, like, we would draw our ideas so we could communicate with one another. I used to leave there with a splitting headache, you know, be like 2 hours of, like, really, really hard work just trying to communicate ideas. And but the one thing that she communicated fairly well, she had this an Orthodox church calendar in the corner of her room, and she had, like, her little Orthodox prayer corner, right? Orthodox people have like a corner where they put icons up. So she had an icon of Jesus up there, and there was a calendar on the wall, and on the calendar there would be a picture of Jesus there, like, you know, with the shepherd's staff or something like that, carrying his sheep or whatever. And every month it changed. We get them too, right? My wife and I, we get the calendar for our church, and it's like that. And every time I see that, it reminds me of her, right? And this story is just always in my mind, you know? And my grandmother would point to that picture of Jesus, whether it was the icon on the wall or whether the calendar picture. At one hand, she's pointing at it, and the other one, she's like tapping on my chest, on my heart. And she say, Jesu Cristo, Jesu Cristo, Jesu Cristo. You know, she's like trying to say, I need Jesus in my heart. I need Jesus in my heart. And like, I got that, and I was just like, you know, I was not Christian of any sort, you know, at that time. I was raised up Roman Catholic, you know, kind of my mother dragging me by the ear to their churches. And, you know, I had Holy Communion, and I was confirmed and everything, and, you know, baptized as a kid. I guess you'd call it that, christening. In fact, I've been baptized Roman Catholic. I've been baptized Protestant, and now I've been baptized, or, well, technically chrismated, as Orthodox. So all three of the major swings of Christianity, you know, I have literally fucking took the dive, right? And, but my grandmother, she was the one, it was her prayers, you know, her prayers that I know. And I bet even in the afterlife they continue, you know? She's like a just like my a saint to me, you know, a saint to me, my grandmother. Like I said, I didn't grow up like full Ukrainian. I had difficulty, like when I would go to that church. I didn't go to that church like to be an Orthodox. I went to that at like certain events. Like the last time I went there was her funeral, right? We did her funeral at that church. I was a pallbearer, all that stuff. But they would have like weddings. They would have all these festivals, you know, and everybody would meet. Like it's a big graveyard now, humongous cemetery. But, you know, back in the 70s, it was a lot of wide open fields, and we would all pull up and tailgate back there, right? You'd pull up, your tailgate, and everybody would bring all this food, and they'd be drinking beer and vodka. And like the guys, they'd be getting drunk, and the priest would come around blessing everything, you know. And the Orthodox, what they do, they have incense, right? And they just like make the sign of the cross with incense on everything as they go. And they walk by, he's got all his robes on and everything, and he's praying for everybody. And as they go by, like all these guys are, you know, sitting there drinking their vodka, making fun of the priest behind his back as he goes, you know. Everything's done in Ukrainian. And that was really what my issue was with it. It was a cultural thing. It was a cultural gathering, and for so many of the people there, it wasn't about the church. It wasn't about their faith. It wasn't about Jesus. It wasn't about the religion. It wasn't about any of that. It was just being with other Ukrainian people. And they would make fun of the priest, like I said, and they would all communicate in Ukrainian, and that's kind of been like the problem with the Orthodoxy in America. Like a lot of people consider their faith, they come to faith in Jesus, they think of what church they should go to, what they should believe, and Orthodoxy never comes to mind. Why? Because when Orthodoxy come across into the United States, it's brought by immigrants, and it's set up in immigrant communities, and it's set up in immigrant culture, right? The Greeks come over, they set up their Greek Orthodox church, they call back to Greece, and Greece sends them a priest, and they do everything in the Greek language, and they keep unto themselves, right? Ukrainians the same way, Russians, everybody does that. Now you've got American versions of it. That's where I go. It's called Orthodox Church in America, right? The OCA. But even all these formerly very cultural versions of Orthodoxy in America have finally given over to the culture here, and they're starting to address the community on their cultural terms, mainly by doing their services in English language. So I can go to a Greek Orthodox church, not being Greek, and get along just fine. I can go to an Antiochian church, which is Syrian, right? Damascus. Antioch is in Syria, right? And, you know, so some kind of, I guess, Arab, you'd call that. And I'd get along fine because they do their services in English. You see what I'm saying? The Russian Orthodox church that I've been to is up in McKinney, you know, a couple of months ago. My wife and I went up there for a special event. Everything is done in English. In fact, their priest will come down every once in a while, like if our priest is off on vacation or something, and he'll do services in our place and do it in English, right? So now it's something that has become culturally viable for the ordinary American person. And any of you who may be considering Christianity in general or a change in the way you're approaching God, in your Christianity, now you can look at Orthodoxy. It's a viable alternative, and I recommend it highly. You know, so like I didn't grow up that way, so I was an outsider, right? As a kid in the 70s, I was an outsider to the whole Ukrainian Orthodox thing, and it was never an option for me because I recognized early on that it had everything to do with the culture involved, and I wasn't part of that culture. In fact, you know, that happened in my life where they kind of mocked me for being a half bastard, a half breed, right? Oh, you're one of them, you know? And yeah, to this day, I don't really like Ukrainians from that. That's just something that, like, is stuck in my fucking ribs. It ain't been pulled out yet. So I didn't grow up that way. But my cousins did, you know? My cousins here in Jersey who lived down, you know, next town from me where I ended up going to high school, they were all raised Ukrainian. Atheist, not Orthodox, but they were raised Ukrainian. They knew the language and everything like that. My cousins up in Canada, I got all these cousins up in Canada. They all grew up going to like not only Ukrainian church, but Ukrainian school where they taught cultural things like the language and the history of Ukraine and all that. And they're very Ukrainian, both sides, mother and father, right? My aunt and my uncle. I was just not put up that way. Now, my, I heard from, I keep in touch, like through, social media. I have contact with my cousins up there, but I got one who just like sends me stuff like every morning. And he sent me a video the other day. It was kind of interesting. You know, like I haven't really seen him in years, right? Like the last time I went up to the Canada area was when his mother, my aunt, died. And that was 2003. So I haven't been up there in that long. I ain't seen him personally in that long. So he's aged and he's older than me to begin with. You know, he's like 10 years older than me to start. And, he sent this video. It was kind of like a selfie video, like him and his son, who I've never met. They were riding motorcycles one day, and it was cool. I looked at my cousin. Now, he like put on weight. He's a little thick in the face. He's got a very Ukrainian/Russian look to him. But he also looks very much like my brother. And it's funny because my brother, while you can tell he's my brother, he doesn't really look like me. And he definitely doesn't look like either of my parents. But as he's gotten older and put on a little weight, like in his face and his neck, now he kind of looks like my cousin up in Canada, who in turn looks like his mother, who is our blood aunt, my brother and I. So somehow, my brother's appearance apparently kind of made it through the genetic chain, bypassing my parents and picking from my aunt. I don't know how that shit works, but there I could finally see it. There's where my brother's appearance fits into the family, you know? And that's kind of, it's just kind of funny to me. You know, it's kind of funny to me. He's up there, you know. In his video, he's got this... he's talking about motorcycles and everything, but then he's starting to like explain to his son, it's my cousin now, talking to his son about Ukrainian Cossacks, right? And the culture in Ukraine of like these old, really, it's, if you thought about, if you really saw, looked into it, they were like the bikers of yore, right? They were like the 1% bikers of yore back in Russia and Ukraine, right? Like southern Russia, Ukraine, and you know, Ukraine had a couple of their own bands of them along a couple of different rivers. And you know, my grandfather was involved with that. You know, he's like the early 20th century version of a Ukrainian Cossack. And he was also like a cavalryman for the White Army. This dude's got the story. Somebody got to write a book about this guy's life. I can't get everything together, but man, the shit that I've heard and what he'd been through. You know, but anyway, without going off on that tangent, that's for another day, you know. But, you know, he was part of, like, a band of Cossacks even this late into history. Now, there, a lot of that has been started up in the past 20 years. The Cossacks were, like, incredible horseback riders, right? Trick riders, warriors. You know, they're killing on horseback at breakneck speed. They would just run up and cut your head off, you know. They were wild. They were drinking. They were dancing. Look it up, Cossacks, right? The Ukrainian Cossacks and Russian. They all kind of live their same lifestyle. You know, Ukrainians in the old day, you know, centuries ago, they were based on an island fortress in the Dnieper River, right? The one that runs out of Kiev and down south, kind of meanders through the heart of Ukraine, kind of splits it in two, right, geographically. And, you know, honestly, Ukraine and the problems that are happening now, there's a relation. There's always been an eastern half and a western half. And the western half has always been, or the western half has always been Catholic oriented, you know, attached to Rome. Not necessarily Roman Catholic, but there's a Byzantine Catholic. It's a Eastern Catholicism, but there's an attachment. And it's through Poland, right? It's through the affiliation with Poland, right? There's a lot of Polish influence on the west of Ukraine. And there's a lot of Russian influence on the east of Ukraine. And with that is also the Orthodoxy, right? And it's always been this way. And right smack down the middle is a river that kind of divides the two geographically. Now, my family is over from all the way over in the Donbass, what they call the Donbass now, whatever all the fighting is about. We came from there originally. So we're Ukrainians, but in a kind of Russified quadrant of the Ukraine. And anyway, I'm talking about this island fortress. It was called the Sich, and it's spelled S-I-T-C-H, right? Sich, that's how it's pronounced. And that's what the fortress was called. When I was a kid growing up, my father played semi-pro soccer in these ethnic leagues in Newark, right? There was the Newark Ukrainians. I may have mentioned that before. And they had their own bar over on Sanford Avenue, right? There was like their own sports club. And it was really a corner tavern is what it was. But it was just for them, you know. They ran it. They owned it. And it was called the Sich. So that's where I first heard that word. My father would talk about the Sich. It was the Sich Club. And we would go there, you know, every weekend. They had a game, and then we would go to the club. They would do events. Like one event was, for example, like my parents' wedding anniversary one year. They had a party there, maybe more than one year. I remember one in particular. May have mentioned that before. I don't know. It's not worth talking about right now. But yeah, that's it with the Ukrainian Cossacks and the fortress of it all. You know, and I say like these Cossacks were kind of like the bikers of yore, right? The 1% bikers of yore. And it's interesting because there's actually a Cossacks motorcycle club, right? That's prevalent here in North Texas, more out in the country, you know, more out like to the north and east, and then out again like past Fort Worth. This is my understanding, unless they've spread a little different, you know. I don't see a whole lot of them around in post-Arlen area. Every once in a while, you'll see one drift through. Every once in a while, you'll be at a party, you know, a biker party, if you hang out with that kind of a crowd. And one or two of them might be there. But they named themselves after these Cossacks, right? And they got this, you know, they got a couple of different emblems that go by. I don't know everything there is to know about them. It's not really my business to talk. My understanding is like there's kind of like they're divided into a 1% version, and there's something that's not that. But they're both under the same kind of umbrella. I don't know exactly what those dynamics are. But I think along with it, they've got two different kind of, what do we call them? Patches, right? The patches on their back. One of them is like a skull with a knife, and the other one is something. But I'm not positive about that. And I've seen them around, and I've been places where they're at, you know. And it just always interests me. You know, I always want to have that conversation, and like, you know what a Cossack is? You know? And expecting that a whole bunch of like Texans from like the country out in Texas, right, who ride motorcycles have no idea what a Cossack is. That's what I would expect. But I could be wrong. But and they came to prominence. You know, see, the thing about, and again, I don't want to get into the business of people. But we had an episode down here in 2015. Actually, I was in Tennessee when it happened. That was during my little hiatus away for 18 months when I went to Tennessee. And during that time, and it was national news, so I recall it then. There was an incident down at Twin Peaks. It's kind of like a Hooters, I guess, you know. You know, put two and two together, Twin Peaks. There was a big club meeting, like an inter-club meeting down there. Meetings I used to go to when I was more involved with this stuff. But they had one that they had all the way down in Waco, Texas, for some reason, right? And they had this Waco's Twin Peaks shootout where, what, 9 people were killed? Cops were involved shooting people with ARs, and it was this big ruckus between these Cossacks and the dominant 1% group of Texas, which has always been the dominant 1% group of Texas, the Bandidos, right? And there's a clash, you know, there's things that happen, you know, when you're dominant, part of what you get as dominant in Texas is the right to wear a bottom rocker that says, Texas, right? That's your territory, and you are the dominant one in that territory. Nobody else gets to make that claim. And anybody else who tries has to reckon with the dominant party. which in this case was the Bandidos. And apparently the Cossacks were riding around with Texas bottom rockers, and conflict had been occurring all along the way. And they were outsiders to this confederation of clubs, as it was. They were not necessarily invited to these gatherings, right? And they showed up in force. And when they did, a battle broke out, a literal Texas gunfight, starting in the parking lot of the place and partially working its way inside. And like I said, people were shot and killed. And it was a big fucking deal, you know? A good friend of mine was actually part of one of those clubs, and he was literally on the way there when it broke out, you know? And he gives me a lot of insight, but I don't want to get into details about this sort of thing. You could find out if you haven't heard about it or you don't know a lot about it and you're interested. There's a lot of YouTube videos on the subject, you know? Just the Waco Twin Peaks, Bikers Shootout, Cossacks, Bandidos. Yeah, it's out there. Waco, you know? Waco has become known for crazy shit, right? Crazy people. Billy Joe Shaver, one of my favorites, right? He's known as the Wacko from Waco. The Wacko from Waco. He's actually from Corsicana originally. I got a buddy who lives down outside of Corsicana right now, a guy I used to work with. Really good dude. Really good dude. And they built a statue, right? Billy Joe died 2 years ago. And now they've erected a statue for him somewhere in Corsicana, which I have not yet seen, right? I almost contributed to the construction of it, to have my name put on a brick or something like that. I really like Billy Joe Shaver. You know, I seen him for my 50th birthday. And I've probably told the story before, but it was like going to a honky-tonk church, right? The guy is very religious. He might be Baptist, he might be Pentecostal. Hard for me to really reckon with the way he talks when he's up there, but he does. He tells a lot of stories. He's one of those guys who were born like in the 30s into all the fucking depression year shit. You know, it's like he was born and his mother left him and he was raised by his aunt and no father ever. His aunt and his grandmother brought him up and she got a job. I don't know, the mother came back eventually and they got took out of the cotton fields because she was pretty enough to be a waitress in a bar, and that's how they made it over to Waco. And just all these fucking stories with this guy. What a crazy life. But he was a prolific songwriter, right? I mean, he's like a Texas treasure. And I mean, his songs were so good, right, that Waylon Jennings, one of the greatest of them all, right, when he finally got hold of the songs that Billy Joe wrote, he made an entire album of Billy Joe Shaver songs, or at least mostly Billy Joe Shaver songs. And he called it Honky Tonk Heroes out of one of Billy Joe's songs. And it is recognized as like the very first album, the very first record made in the genre of outlaw country. So it was this collaboration effort, basically, between Waylon and Billy Joe. Now, it wasn't an actual collaboration. There was a point in time where Billy Joe was in the studio, and he was like trying. He kept on interjecting on what Waylon ought to do with this song until he pissed Waylon off. Right? There's a lot of stories between these two that go back and forth, like where they come to fisticuffs and shit. And it's really funny. But the both of them are like two of my favorites of all time. And I love to read about it, hear stories about it. You know, Billy Joe Shaver, the Wacko from Waco. There's an actual song called that. They called him. He started getting known. He shot a guy in the face, right? Somebody was fucking with him in a bar or something like that. He had like a little .22 pistol, and he just pulled it out and fucking shot the guy. He didn't kill him, but he shot him, you know? And then he got like this whole reputation and everything out of it. They start calling him the Wacko from Waco for the crazy things that he does. There's the Waco thing, right? And Honky Tonk Heroes, that's an excellent country song. Go find it, whether it's his version of it or Waylon's version of it, right? The first I ever heard it was Waylon. I learned about Billy Joe because I became a fan of Waylon Jennings. The two go hand in hand, you know? And Honky Tonk Heroes, see, I was doing a Facebook Live presentation for about an hour, hour and a half every Saturday morning, like through COVID for better than a year without fail. And I'd go out there with a guitar and a Bible. I'd play a little guitar music, talk some shit, and then eventually I'd start preaching the Bible. I'd open up to somewhere and just start going, right? And my closing song was always a rendition of Honky Tonk Heroes. I love playing that song. It's just a fun song to play on guitar for me. And now when I hear that song, I actually think about times in my own life, you know, where I sat there in my workshop in front of this camera with the people who I know from my past and present, kind of tuning in and checking me out. And I have a fond memory of all that. Billy Joe Shaver, if you don't know about Billy Joe Shaver, he actually had an opportunity to act in a movie. He was co-star in a movie with Robert Duvall, who is like one of my top fucking five, if not top-ist, Hollywood actors. I don't really maintain a favorite list, but I know that there's a couple of guys, whatever movie they're in, it's always a good movie. Robert Duvall is that dude, right? He was the consigliere in the Godfather. He was Augustus McCrae in Lonesome Dove. So many movies, every one of them fucking great. He's almost always somebody different than all of them, you know. He's really an actor, right? He's not just a personality that takes up a role. He changes, you know. He acts. He's really good, Robert Duvall. But he made a movie, and a lot of people don't know about it. It's years gone by already, called The Apostle, right? It was about some Pentecostal preacher, you know, with a track record, right? He was kind of like a ladies' man. He was kind of adulterous, and he was like a Pentecostal preacher from Texas who kind of wandered away from his troubles in Texas into Louisiana and was starting a church up there. And, well, his kind of buddy, his kind of sidekick was Billy Joe Shaver, right? And Billy Joe played that role in a Robert Duvall movie. Really cool. Go look at it. Check it out. Robert Duvall, The Apostle, right? Just like it sounds. And I mentioned about Billy Joe making the move out of Corsicana into Waco, and it's in the song Honky Tonk Heroes. It's a mention of this bar called Green Gables, which no longer exists. I looked for it. I wanted to go to it just to sit in it, right? But this is where Billy Joe grew up. He grew up in a honky-tonk bar, right? After they pulled him out of the cotton field. All these guys, they grew up pulling cotton. Waylon did it. Johnny Cash did it, you know? Billy Joe did it. It's like it's something about being out in a cotton field. Think about all the Delta Blues guys, right? Something about being out in a cotton field and doing that back-breaking fucking work turns you into a musician with soul, you know. It's incredible. I've never gotten to do that, to really look into, to uncover the mystery of how so many exceptionally talented musicians come out of that kind of background, you know. But yeah, Billy Joe is one of those too. But he ended up growing up in a honky tonk bar, Green Gables, and his story Honky Tonk Heroes makes mention of that place specifically. Yeah, this is speaking of bars in Waco. You know, I have in my past, I stepfathered quite a handful of young people in my life, and one of them went to Baylor University, which is the Division I school in Waco that makes Waco Waco, right? It's technically a Baptist school, although this stepson of mine was not any kind of Baptist or anything like that. It's just where he went to school for a year or so. And then there was an incident, right? He was in a fraternity down there, and the fraternity went out to some bar in Waco, and I forget the name of it, and he had a girlfriend with him, and they were out just drinking, you know, doing the drinking thing. And to hear him tell the story, she didn't drink all that much, but they went back to his apartment and went to bed, fell asleep, and she died. Had some kind of sudden heart issue, like you're hearing about now. All these people with the myocarditis and whatever, they're just like, all these young athletic people are dropping dead. It was like that. She was a volleyball player, right? She was kind of tall, put together, good, pretty girl, smart girl. And she was playing volleyball in college. And all of a sudden, 19 years old, it's like something happened with her heart and she fucking died. You know, in his apartment, in bed, in the middle of the night after they were out drinking at some bar in Waco as a fraternity, right? So it was a fraternity event. And it was this big deal. It was all over the news, all over the state, you know. You turn on the news every night for a week or two. It's like they're talking about this whole happening with this particular fraternity. The fraternity ended up getting suspended from Baylor University for like 5 years after it. It was a big fucking deal, right? But there was nothing nefarious. It turned out she had a heart condition that nobody was aware of. There was an autopsy done and everything like that. And really, really sad story all the way around. And I just can't imagine the impact it had on this guy, my stepson. He had issues, you know. He had issues going into it. He's had a little bit of a rough life himself. But that was an issue that he didn't deserve, you know. And that really sucked. Just fucked up shit about Waco. Fucked up shit happens in Waco, right? You've heard the Branch Davidians, right? The Branch Davidians. The Branch. They're a branch of... some other religious group called the Davidians, which is a split off from the Seventh-day Adventists, which goes back to the Adventists in the 18th century to probably all the way to like the Millerites, right? And it's like this whole sequence of all these kind of, well, there's a strain of Sabbatarian that runs through there. But I think more, common throughout that entire strain is that emphasis on end time stuff, the apocalypse, which I think is just crazy. I could do a whole episode about that. I just might too, but you know, it's like, what you had there is like you got these groups that are like really wrapped up in end times prophecy, and I mean to the point where like you sell your, you know, somebody, some figurehead at the razor's edge of your congregation makes some kind of prophetic prediction based on the book of Revelation in the Bible. And like you go sell your house and give your dogs away, you know, sell all your possessions, go stand on the hill and wait for the fucking UFO to come and pick you up. That sort of thing, right? That what kind of people we're dealing with. And then you get like groups that split off from people that do that. You know, like when the day doesn't come and it fails, maybe a group of them say, well, that guy ain't no prophet. So they went and followed somebody else. And it's what you got. You got this little, it's just with Protestantism in general. It's just a splintering splinter of splinters, you know, just breakaway groups from breakaway groups from breakaway groups. And you got like 10,000 fucking denominations and it's bedlam and it's crazy. And it was never supposed to be that way. But this is, here you go. You got the Branch Davidians. Then their guy, their quote unquote Messiah, their quote unquote Lamb of God, right? Their prophetic figure, David Koresh, who went to my wife's high school, right? Not at the same time. He's like 10 years older, right? But he actually went to, and in his junior year, dropped out of the same high school where my wife went. And my stepchildren, my stepboys, they both went there too. And just the shit that people believe, it's incredible. Like this guy, you read in the Bible about the idea of the Lamb of God, right? And 99 out of 100 Christians recognize it, going all the way back to like, you can go take it all the way back to like the Passover lamb in Exodus, but you could really bring it all the way back to Abel making his sacrifice, right? All the way back at the beginning of Genesis, like chapter 4, I think it is. It talks about Cain and Abel, right? One had this sacrifice, one had the other, one was wrong. It doesn't explain why at that time, but you find out in time. But anyway, beside the point. Well, there's always been a sacrificial lamb through history. And anybody, well, most anybody who's a Christian understands that lamb to be it represents Jesus Christ, right? It represents Jesus all the way through. Jesus refers to himself as the Lamb of God. John the Baptist, who's the forerunner, right? The prophet who heralded the coming of the Messiah, specifically Jesus Christ, pointed at him and said, "Behold, the Lamb of God." Everybody knows it's very evident that the Lamb of God had always been Jesus Christ. Except David Koresh and the idiots that followed him. He believed he was the Lamb of God. And he made his linguistical gymnastics and twist of logic to convince people that no, it wasn't Jesus, it was him, and that he was a Messiah, that there's not just one Messiah, but there's many Messiahs, and he's one of them, and they believed all this shit, you know? And how do you believe that shit? Because you're brought up in that crap, right? They had a, and there was a movie I just watched, that's why I got this stuff on mine, like, he's like number one partner in crime going through this, right? His big recruiter guy happened to be a, and I forget his name, he's probably still alive, I don't know. Oh, no, he died, he killed himself. He was a professor of theology, right, quote-unquote professor of theology in Hawaii before he met this David Koresh dude, and he was swayed by what David Koresh had to say. Now, the only way a professor of theology could be swayed by what David Koresh had to say is if he basically already believed the same kind of shit David Koresh did, right? And it turns out that he was Seventh-day Adventist. So there you go, right? Professor of theology, but he's studied that line of, and I'm going to be plain with you, horse shit, right? I don't mean to be mean like that, but this is serious stuff. And those people were seriously fucked up, you know? I think of them as cult knuckleheads. They're not the only ones. It's not the only stream of them. They're all over the place. Anybody who would believe that kind of crap. See, I rail on Protestantism. I was one, right? I'm an ordained minister in Protestantism. And I've been a Sunday school teacher. I've been a Bible school teacher in general, teaching adults predominantly, right? I've had director roles in different ministries. I've been through. I haven't been through seminary or anything like that, but I've been around and deeply involved with Protestantism and a couple of different variants of it, you know, the Baptist and Church of Christ, an offshoot of that. And I know a thing or two. I know a little bit, you know. And I know what I learned along the way, far and wide, with the possible exception of what are known as the mainline denominations, you know, the really big ones like United Methodist, Anglican, shit like that. A lot of all these little splinter groups that come off, it's always going to be a matter of the power and influence of a particular personality, right? I call them all cult of personality. It's all about this one guy. And his ability to sway people, to persuade, his persuasiveness. And that is not what this stuff is all about, right? But people take advantage of people. People who don't know better are susceptible to this sort of thing. And then they end up being a cult knucklehead. I don't even know why I laugh about it. It's like, it's so ridiculous, right? And then you had this whole siege that happened, right? And this is what the story. You wouldn't know about David Koresh, and you wouldn't know about Branch Davidians and Waco. You would have never heard of fucking Waco, more than likely than not, if it wasn't for the siege that happened on their property, which they called Mount Carmel. So it was the Mount Carmel siege. It wasn't in the city limits. It was 10 miles, east of Waco? Just out in the country, right out in the plains. Back in the early 90s, there wasn't shit out there. There ain't much out there now. I've been through there a couple of times, you know. Good country. I would love to live out there, but there ain't shit out there. And that's how they liked it. That's how they were living, and that's fine. That's good, a good choice of life. See, David Koresh didn't start this shit. It started in the 70s, the Branch Davidians. Somebody split off of a split off group of a split off group of a split, you know, some down the line. And he kind of, that guy died, and David Koresh had like a political infight with the dude's son, and Koresh won. So he became like the whole benefactor of, is benefactor the right word? He basically inherited the power of the cult and became its prophetic leader. And, he led them into this disaster. That was the Mount Carmel siege. And this is where the ATF came in and the FBI followed. The idea was you had this cult group out in the middle of Texas stocking up firearms. they weren't doing anything illegal, except there was investigations into the activity of David Koresh, where it pertained to, like, having sex with minors and polygamy, being married to multiple women at the same time, and a bunch of those women actually being minors. There was concerns about that, but that's not federal shit. That's state stuff, right? That's something that Texas needed to go in and deal with. And as far as stocking up firearms, who doesn't? You know, if you live in Texas, you know, at least half everybody here is stockpiling firearms just because. You know, there's, I think there's a good reason. When you watch, I mentioned this movie again, right? There were any documentary about this, or this movie I'm going to tell you about that I saw the other day, you see how the government handles these kind of situations and how fucked up it is. My God, you know, you have every reason in the world to want to be ready to defend yourself against the tyranny of this fucking government. Unbelievable. These federal fucking people need to be knocked down a couple of rungs. Absolute goons, paramilitary goons. What the hell? What the hell is the FBI doing? Paramilitary. Federal Bureau of what? Investigation. Right? Investigation. Not law enforcement. Not military. They're not like a branch of the Marine Corps, but they fucking behave like it, right? Unbelievable. The ATF goes in and fucks up shit. Yeah, it's just like Ruby Ridge, right? Which happened like almost simultaneously, right? ATF goes up there and does something fucked up, and then the FBI has to go in and try to clean it up. They fuck it up even more. Everything is fucked up, and they get in front of the cameras, and they just lie, 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 lie. Federal government blows. It pisses me off so much. And like, to watch it, like I talked about this storm. I'm sitting here, the ice storm starting up, and maybe you can even hear, you know, my windshield getting pelted with stuff. I don't know. I don't know if that's coming through on the microphone. But, you know, you had this cold air mass from the north coming, and it's colliding with this warm air mass from the south, and it's making this storm situation. What we were looking at with this David Koresh and Mount Carmel siege and the ATF and FBI, you're looking at, on the Branch Davidian side, a bunch of cult knuckleheads. And then you're looking on the federal government side, a bunch of paramilitary knuckleheads. It's like the fucking Keystone Cops, man. It was just crazy. Everybody is wrong and making everything wronger. It was all fucked up. I was taught when I was a little kid, two wrongs don't make a right. Yeah, somebody in there has got to like admit that they're wrong and like just try to patch things up and start over again. No, everybody's full of fucking pride and ego, and it's just a fucking really sad situation, right? Federal government, really. We need to regionalize things, not globalize things. Get it fucking right again. Look, tell me if you don't have similar feelings if you watch. I watched this movie. It's called Waco. It's actually not a movie, but a series. It's a 7-part series that adds up to being a very long movie, right? It would be like if you put it on NBC or CBS or something, it would be what you call miniseries. This is produced, I guess, by Paramount, and it's viewable on Paramount Plus. That's where I seen it. I got Paramount Plus because I'm watching all the Star Trek stuff there. They own it all. But every once in a while, I'll just go look for something odd. And an odd search, this thing came up Waco, and I was like, all right, I'll go watch that. Me and my wife sat down over the weekend, watched the whole thing, binge-watched all this Waco, and it just really lit me up. It just really, on so many levels, because my faith, you know, my Christian faith, Christian brethren, people, you know, struggling to understand means a whole hell of a lot to me. And to see like this kind of ass clown, all he was ever in his life was about sex, and he was using knowledge of the Bible to twist it and foster sexual situations, scenarios for himself. Real scumbag. Let me give you an idea what I mean. All right, how scumbag is it? He's got this cult going on. Men show up, they bring their wife and the kids. He tells the men that they have to be celibate and they have to basically donate their wife to him so he can impregnate them and make children for the ongoing perpetuation of their group. In other words, all the kids that are going to be born out of Branch Davidians are all going to be David Koresh's kids. The rest of you guys basically got to cut your nuts off and forget about sex the rest of your life. The kids you have are given over. It's all fucked up. And they did it. They fucking did it. They bought into it. Many of them. It's incredible. I can't fucking imagine being that level of stupid. See how excited I'm getting? That's how good this Waco miniseries was. If you get an opportunity to watch it, go find it somewhere. Watch it. See if you don't get equally touched. Touched like I am about it. What was really cool about the way they did it, it was, you know how like you watch a movie and it's a story based on some book, right? This was a story based on two books. One of them was an insider in the compound, one of the Branch Davidians, right, who survived the whole thing. The other one was the FBI's head negotiator wrote a book. So you had it from each perspective, and everything was kind of brought into this. There was no favorite. There was no side that you really leaned towards in it all. Ultimately, I think the paramilitaristic approach and angle of the federal government was really the bigger asshole. None of what happened there had to be that way. Yes, the Branch Davidians were fucked up. Yes, David Koresh is fucking criminal and immoral and a pervert that needed to be brought to justice. But what they did, what the federal government did going in there, was not the way to do it. And it ended up being a disaster where many, many people were killed, including a lot of children, right? What a fucking disaster. So anyway, yeah. Waco, Texas, baby. Waco, Texas. Where all kinds of fucked up shit happens. You're traveling into deep in the heart of Texas and you go through Waco, give a little tip of the cap for everything I mentioned here today, and beware yourself. Something in the water down there. Something in the water.
Thank you for tuning into Post-Stalin Monologics. Please understand that this project is meant to be part of a long-term archive as a series of snapshots reflecting a distant past. We are not seeking advertisers, but may at times accept private anonymous donations to help mitigate production costs. Further information involving this project and archived releases of Post-Stalin Monologics can be accessed over the World Wide Web at poststalin.com and at onsert.com. Comments, critiques, and inquiries may be submitted to Maverick through email at maverick88@poststalin.com.